Your Grace, he won the greatest tourney of them all. The greatest lords and mightiest champions of the Seven Kingdoms rode in that tourney, and the Prince of Dragonstone bested them all.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, Card Game DB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
Welcome to episode 258 of the White Book Podcast. I'm pretty sure we have bested them all. That or caught them all? I don't know. Pretty much everybody's playing Pokemon these days.
I am not.
I dodged the trend too.
Good man, good man. I played for a while and just decided there wasn't quite enough to do.
Catch Pokemon, right?
Yeah. You pretty much just catch Pokemon.
Endless walking, endless catching of Pokemon.
To be clear, yeah. You catch all the Pokemon, though, not of the Pokemon.
You're not wrong, Chris. If you catch them all, that's something to do. There are a lot of them.
Apparently, you can go to the gym.
It's true. There are gyms, apparently.
You can work them out.
Yep.
Yeah.
I heard Pikachu bench presses about 250 pounds. It's pretty impressive.
That's it?
Yeah, but how much does he squat?
I don't know. I mean, Luke, the creature weighs like 20 pounds.
I guess that's true. To ratio, yeah, that's like true. Well, that's what I was thinking.
His body weight.
His squat would probably be insane. You see how short his legs are?
Yeah.
Wow. Welcome to the most awkward intro I can remember on the show in quite a while. Well done, guys. Well done.
That's what I'm here for, Will.
Thank you.
Not on often, but I make the intros really awkward.
You know, actually, now that you mention that, that is a talent of yours, Patrick.
It's true. Yeah. Well, you know, I do everyone, it again.
Yeah, everyone brings a unique flair to the table. Here on a Team Right week, we have myself. I bring, normally I bring a lot of robot noises and things, but hopefully the new microphone and reformatted computer are doing better with that this time around. I think Patrick just clarified what he brings to the table. What other Team Right member do we have with us? And what do you bring to the table, sir?
You got Luke, and I guess I bring bow ties and dance moves.
And rippling biceps.
And alcoholism.
Wow.
Man, Luke and brings the most.
I was going to say, I feel like all of these things are badges of honor, not so much digs.
Oh, for sure. No. I talked to you in the melee on Saturday, and somebody was like, hey, Luke, what are you drinking? Is that Coke? And he's like, no, it's bourbon. It's in like a 32-ounce cup. So
during the tournament?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Round one. Going hard.
Wow. Well done. Well done.
It was beyond hair of the dog at that point. I was gonna be destroyed if I didn't just keep going.
Wow. Okay. Well, we've got another voice with us this week, and it is not the usual fourth member of Team Right. This week we had to bring a guest champ on. In fact, he's kind of new to that club. Though now the OP program has been stratified more, and Gen Con is just continentals. I don't know. Can I really call you a champ, Chris?
I mean, I like the term, but if you're gonna put me in your club, I'll hang out with you as a championship level player. I'm okay with that.
Legit.
It's elite.
It is a club of one.
The meetings are very lonely. So Chris, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say you bring a really sweet beard to the table.
Yeah, I think I'm probably the beardiest of the members on the show today. I've seen Will's nice close-cut Tony Stark look and Luke's nice stubble. Patrick, I'm sure you'll get there.
Stubble?
Someday.
What? Man.
Someday.
What? Stubble?
Okay. Well, we actually have one other person to address here on the show. And, you know, I have to admit, I'm not sure how to quantify his beard level. So I think we may have to find out. I think our guest for this week brings an awful lot to the table. So why don't you tell us real quick who you are, sir, and what you do. But before we quite get there, I'm going to back up to a thought I had, which is that I meant to tell the listeners, Chris, of course, won the Gen Con Championships in Joust in Indianapolis over the weekend, and he's going to be all over the various media outlets talking about his win and such. So we're doing something a little bit different, and we're not just getting that play-by-play rundown from him. He is joining us for an interview with our fifth man on the show this week. And with that, now I turn it over to you, Zach.
Well, hello. I'm Zach Rayburn, the Organized Play Manager at Asmodee North America. We handle Fantasy Flight games and some other Asmodee titles, Organized Play. We make you play games.
You make us play them. That's terrifying. I'm picturing someone, like, forcing me, like, into a seat. You, sir, are playing Battlestar.
Every single
which actually,
I was wondering who hired that guy that came to my apartment and told me I had to go to Gen Con.
Yeah, yeah. On the plus side, that full on Cylon suit was pretty wicked. I wasn't going to say no to that.
Yeah. See, I see it more as like it's just like pulling puppet strings out of the ether and putting them into each box of product, and as we open it, then we just like get them attached when we put them in our hands.
Quiet, you fool.
Yeah. See. Yeah. Exactly. I knew I was on.
Okay, so I'm curious a little bit about your actual job then, Zach. A couple of kind of related things here. One, just for my curiosity, I wonder, were you an FFG employee prior to the merger with Asmodee NA, or were you with Asmodee and now together, or how did that play out?
Right around the time that FFG and Asmodee were starting to go into the merger process. You know, it had already been finalized before I had started, but it hadn't happened yet. I was hired to be the organized play manager at FFG, which quickly transitioned into FFG's marketing and sales and warehousing operations and whatnot, becoming part of Asmodee North America, which obviously organized play is part of marketing. So here I am.
Okay, so what all do you handle there as manager? Like, just the like nuts and bolts of actual events? Do you have a hand in like FAQ updates and things like that to keep the play environments healthy, or what?
Sure. So the main things that my department has done and hopefully continues to do without me wrecking it is the organized play machine for FFG continues to roll. So, you know, we not only create the components, you know, from all the way from concept to design to, you know, actual production and ordering and getting all of that fulfilled to put together and then shipped out to the world. We also, you know, create the marketing for that stuff. Then, of course, the other end is, you know, making sure these events happen out there in the world. There's an events team, which has its own events manager and a couple of guys as well that, you know, get the contractors and the resources and the contracts themselves with the different venues and shows and everything and get all that sorted out. Organized play mostly is trying to fill those spaces with, you know, fun offerings when it comes to, you know, championship events or other events. And then we're actually putting together the materials you end up winning when you go out to tournaments to play. Logistics part of getting the kind of framework and infrastructure there is, you know, we handle the tournament regulations and then some of the other, you know, documents and things that you might have seen. FAQs and the game rules, obviously, are more handled by the designers and developers of the games. So we facilitate them getting up into the proper place on the website, but ultimately they're being mostly helped along with a little bit of our input from the designers and developers.
Zach, what led you to this job in particular? What are your sort of your history, maybe a little bit about why you're interested in organized play and how you ended up with that job?
Sure. So I come from a background of pretty much all organized play all the time. You know, I started out as a Magic player back in the day and quickly figured out that, you know, while I thought I was pretty good, I could kind of cut down on the variance and become a judge with my expert rules knowledge. So, you know, I started doing that, got really lucky and met a lot of the people at their judge organization at the time who moved over and started the organized play arm for Upper Deck, who did Versus System and the World of Warcraft trading card game. And I was working with them for a while. I was their judge proctor for a little while, so the person who was administering the judge tests for higher levels at the events themselves, at their, you know, pro circuit and Dark Moon Fair type events. And then from there, I actually went into the private industry, if you will, for a while. I found myself a real job other than playing poker. Which was helping to run a Carrabba's for a little while, which is like an Italian chain restaurant, if you haven't heard of them. They're owned by the Outback Group. From there, I kind of figured out that my passions actually definitely lied back in gaming. So I kind of threw my weight behind getting back into some form of working with cards and games and whatnot. And so I started helping out Cascade Games, which is a great organization that helps run some of the Grand Prix for Magic around the country. And from there, after helping with, you know, some of the bigger events like Grand Prix Portland and LA and Las Vegas, which was a 10,000 person event, I started doing that for some other organizers of Grand Prix around the U.S. And sure enough, I found myself looking at this job interview when one of my bosses at Cascade Games, who's good friends with my new boss, Steve Horvath, there at Asmodee, are very good friends. And Steve Horvath was looking for someone to do this job, and Tim Shields said just the person. So,
okay, so sounds like you've done a ton of different things with a bunch of different companies. So, and every single one of them has a different like definition of what makes their organized play successful, if whether that's attendance or prize support or whatever. So, like, what do you consider to be a successful metric for organized play at FFG/Asmodee North America?
That's a very interesting question. I would definitely say that you know, the programs were very successful before I came along. You know, there's this great communities that they've built. They all really kind of get behind the initiatives and the different things that that different community members want to do. And then in turn, you know, they turn around and support the creation of new players and the kind of sustenance that a model like an LCG requires to foster, you know, a vibrant player community and metagame. I think the metrics that I would try to point to measure success would be things like, you know, attendance at some of these higher end championships, the number of tournament kits that we sell, the level of involvement and even passion expressed through the different community forums and stuff that we've seen a lot of lately. I think there's by no measure a lack of success right now. So
yeah, I guess that was going to be my next question, is did the World hasn't happened yet, but we've gone through store championship, up through regionals, then to nationals, and now we've got the North American that just ended. And I'm wondering if so far those metrics have been met, like in terms of the goals that you've set up.
So I've definitely not been here long enough to go through an entire cycle and be able to see like what growth potential there is in any of these. But I would say that I personally am very happy with all the numbers that are coming in. You know, the one metric I love pointing to, especially when it comes to Game of Thrones, is, the number of kits that we sold for the last season of first edition versus the second season of second edition was almost tripled. The game is
nice.
very vibrant and very much, you know, growing. Those it's hard to keep those core sets in stock a lot of places, so it's good to see. I think the most important thing that you can do if you're looking around in your community and asking yourself, are we growing or are we shrinking, is, are you adding new players? Whenever I talk to people, I'm always, one of my first questions is, oh, that's great, in your community. Well, how welcoming are you, or how inviting, or what kind of events do you run for new players?
Will, didn't you have some?
No, I was actually just testing features a moment ago and realized I can't raise my own hand. And then I was starting to try and type and catch Zach, or before Zach finished, to see if Patrick wanted to nab the next kind of chunk of stuff. So that was my bad, kind of disrupting things. So
no worries. I'll jump into something that was I guess I wouldn't say an issue, but something that definitely came up for me over the course of Gen Con, and that was the big shift, it seems, that we saw from Melee being a championship level event in previous Gen Cons and Worlds, having a card designed for the winner, things of that nature, to this year at Gen Con, which it seemed to be completely a side event. I mean, it's slightly relevant to me, I guess, personally, because I took second in the Melee, and my prizes ended up being basically a summer kit winnings and a playmat, which was cool, but it seemed like a very sudden shift. And when Gen Con was first announced, it sounded like Melee was going to be a championship level event, and then it changed. So I'm just curious as to kind of why that happened. And
that's fair. Actually, a quick little addition to that is also it's not listed as a championship level event at Worlds either.
That too. Yeah.
So want to loop that in there.
Sure. So the great Melee question is it basically comes down to one of the first things that I noticed when I joined the OP team here. So if you're looking for someone to blame, I'm right here. The number one thing that I found when it came to these great guys that have been making OP happen for everyone for years was that it was really hard for them to focus and improve anything just because of how thinly stretched some resources were, not only inside of what they were trying to accomplish, but then also how they were trying to communicate that out to the world. And I don't think that part's improved greatly yet. I very much wish we had more stuff to go out there to kind of communicate why changes are happening and whatnot. It just hasn't been the norm for a little while, so we're adapting to how to make those communications a little more open and a little more transparent. But the key to it is this: when you come in and you start managing a team like that, you want to look for ways to make their lives better. And the fact that they were trying to manage a system where There were so many different elements for every one of these games. You know, there were eight games up until last year, and they were trying to run a world championship that, you know, I got to go in and see, and it was, you know, a big success because of how much effort they were putting into it, and how many hours the entire company was devoting to making things happen at that event, which is great, makes it a very special event and whatnot. It's just very hard to replicate and to do at that level over and over again with the number of, you know, different ways that we wanted to do it. So the question became, all right, there's eight games at this World Championship this year, seven, of course, with Call of Cthulhu leaving. But there are eight games here, and somehow there are 12 World Championship events happening at this event, and they're trying to manage all of those. And so if you look at everything, it turns out that those extra ones are all Game of Thrones events, which is awesome. It's great that those players, you know, yourselves and anyone else out there listening that attended, are very interested in participating in a lot of those events there. But the resources to manage, you know, multi-day events that are fun to play in and whatnot, really starts to be stretched thin when you ask that much to happen. You know, I think people had a great time, and I think the event went off, you know, with a lot of fanfare and fun being had. But ultimately, it comes down to that, if you want to call it the 80-20 rule, even though those numbers aren't always completely accurate. You know, 80% of the good was coming out of running these joust events. And the rest of it was, you know, just stressors and, you know, added complications for a lot of these other things happening. So sat down, analyzed, you know, what was happening to make that happen. And how it turned out was that there's this ascending, you know, aspirational pyramid of events that are happening around the world, from store championships to regionals up to nationals, getting all the way here to worlds. And the vast, vast majority of them are happening as joust events. And then when we turn around and look at, you know, what gets most new players to come in and play these events in stores and get them more involved and keep them, you know, more up to date with the metagame and the new releases of packs and all these things, it's joust, where, you know, people are used to the one-on-one formats. They're used to the, you know, as a store, they're used to that execution of these Swiss events that are played head-to-head. And it's a lot more feasible to hand over the instructions for an event like that to an organizer, and them already know what they're doing. And that's reflected in just the vast number of them, while they were offered the option of running it as one or the other, always, you know, by and large, defaulting to joust. So, evaluating the other formats, melee included, and even draft, which held a world championship last year, we kind of came to the conclusion that the best thing to do was to preserve that, you know, experience for the people who really love that format, of being able to come and play and enjoy themselves amongst friends that love that game, and then also compete for some really cool, memorable prizes that they're going to be able to take home with them and, you know, show their friends and get them into this format and this game and whatnot. And creating other experiences for it outside of Worlds as well, like the championship events at Gen Con and Origins, and, you know, you'll even see some stuff happening elsewhere around the world. But ultimately deciding that each game is entitled to one world championship each year, and the world championships are where we award the card designs. So if I haven't talked long enough on this subject yet, let me just finish by saying we still think Melee is a really cool format. We think it's awesome that the game supports, you know, not only this competitive heads-up, you know, play that is, you know, relatively easy to introduce to the market of game stores that are out there and with what their experience is in running card game events. But in addition, this Melee format presents another way for people to enjoy the game that we also want to support, just not in the way that has an effect on how much we can hone the messaging and the marketing to say, if you hear that there's a store championship, if you hear that there's a Game of Thrones, the card game event, you know you're coming to play Joust unless you hear otherwise. So that's kind of the path we've chosen for how to progress down that road. That being said, you can still expect to see a lot of Melee out there. You know, we had the big tournaments at the past two conventions. We have, you know, there's Stalag coming up, which we're going to be supporting a little more heavily this year. And then even next year, alongside the regional championships for Game of Thrones, there's going to be a really cool Melee event to go with that as well, which if you're listening to this, this should be the first time you're hearing of it. So, spoilers.
Thank you for all that, Zach. That was a very interesting and I think in a lot of ways hopeful answer for all the Melee lovers on here. And I think there's a couple directions that we'd like to go based on your answers in that one. I'd like to start by going back to the very beginning of your answer where you talked about communication with the player base. And, you know, I think that's something that I understand that you think is important, and that's great. And clearly the player base thinks it's important. Is there anything that we as the player base can do to help keep those lines of communication open to allow for kind of a two-way dialogue? I'm thinking specifically in terms of potentially like any sort of volunteer positions, maybe as sort of a liaison per game is just an idea that I might throw out there in that aspect. Specifically, I know coming up for the World Championship, there's some cards that are very impactful that have been spoiled that we know are coming out. And communication-wise, it would be great for the player base to know what the card pool will be well in advance so we know what to prepare for, things like that.
So to address the first issue of communication, I will fall on that sword to begin with. You know, that's one of the things that we highlighted as being something that we wanted to get better at. But honestly, we've just been so busy since I've started with, you know, everything really, you know, from planning some massive tournament offerings to, you know, reforming and splitting to the two different tracks to, you know, even absorbing some additional considerations for working through our new distribution and stuff. There's a lot that has happened, and we honestly have kind of fallen behind in communicating to the level that we wanted to and learning how to do that properly. And so, again, I'll fall on that sword. But for a two-way communication purpose, there's been some talk about, you know, the equivalent of a playtest group, if you will, for OP or for events or for, you know, marketing in general.
Sorry, Will. I just wanted to agree that I'm strongly in favor of that.
That's completely understandable. I can see how valuable it would be. It's just another one of those things that you have to figure out how to execute in a way that, you know, is both fair and equitable, and, you know, also doesn't start giving away everything beforehand because, you know, I don't want to say it ruins it for those people, but there's the people who are most excited are by, you know, an announcement of, hey, here's a new thing we're doing, or here's a new prize, are probably the same kind of people that we would want in that group. So, again, just one thing we're trying to figure out how to do, and, you know, ultimately if we can and want to do it. So it's good to hear that at least the other side is interested. I was hoping that would be the case. So we'll keep you updated if that becomes a thing.
Very cool.
All right. So I think I agree with everything you're saying about communication being important with the player base, and things like having that kind of playtest group of sorts for the OP would be great and everything. But just in the short term, how can we expect to be kind of getting this information? Because I understand everything you said about Melee not being a competitive format because you just don't have the resources to support it. That's completely fair. But the way that we ended up hearing about the fact that Melee was not going to be a championship format was through somebody asking FFG's Twitter, basically. And it was after a lot of people had already bought their tickets to the event. And while people aren't, you know, going with the expectation that they're going to win a card design, it's certainly something that's in the back of their head if they think they're going to a championship level event. And so I'm just kind of curious, is there, you know, can we expect to see in the coming months that we'll have articles on FFG's main site about these kind of changes, or is there something that you'll be setting up specifically through OP that will tell us about this, or are we going to have to keep kind of asking and hoping to get answers about things like this?
That's a fair question, based on especially the history of how things have been communicated. You know, by and large, the stuff that whenever we want to say something to our, you know, our great communities and fans, in the past, it's mostly happened through, these announcement articles that go up on the front page of the website. The issue comes when you want to make an announcement about something that is much, much smaller than, you know, newsworthy, if you will. So the options, you know, that are available to us are, you know, social media, some kind of direct mailing, like the newsletter we've set up, or, you know, even something along the lines of, you know, an article that doesn't get posted to the front page, but just exists, and then sharing it elsewhere and letting the community share amongst themselves. So again, it just comes back to us figuring out how to best set up a chain of communication that works for what we need it to do, while not also, you know, interfering with the marketing activity of you know, the different websites that that are supporting and, you know, doing things for such a large number of games. You know, if you have a publisher that's only working with one game, everything is newsworthy, you know, about that one game to the entire audience that's paying attention to that one game. But as it stands, there's, you know, there's just so many games that are, you know, that are taking taking precedence and being shown off on the main page of our website, that putting something up as, you know, trying to clarify the Melee being different than it has in years past is a tough place to find a home for that message. That being said, we're committed to finding a place for it. It's just, again, been one of those things that we have not done well yet, and we're still searching for a great solution to it.
Okay, listeners, you're probably going to notice a little bit of a disruption here in the episode. I apologize for that. We swapped over to Zencastr for recording, and while great software, we still had some trouble with it. So about a half an hour of really great discussion with Zach evaporated, which is unfortunate. But we're going to try to summarize a little bit of what we missed there and then pick up from some of the questions that we hadn't actually made it to really discussing with Zach yet, and kind of wrap things up. So to kind of summarize, what's the deal with Melee, Zach? We're kind of taking a step back in the bigger picture, but you did say that there's a couple highlights coming up in the next year for Melee folks. So fill us in.
Definitely. So Melee's an awesome format. You know, it's definitely loved by quite a lot of people, but it does have some challenges that are not presented in a heads-up tournament environment. For some of those reasons, in addition to the fact that it's really valuable from a marketing standpoint to be able to say to new players who are the lifeblood of keeping a game alive, that when they hear there's a store championship or a tournament happening in a store, that what they can expect when they show up is going to be, by default, the format that is the main way that the game is played. And in the past, through all the different types of events that there have been, we've really seen that the community has expressed a preference for Joust, which has been, you know, a little more heavily supported because of that. So for those reasons and others, we've kind of focused the marketing and the championship series itself to particularly move on Joust. That being said, Melee has this great history, has this, you know, great player base that really loves it. It is very unique inside of card games and our LCGs, in that it's a, you know, a robustly supported by design and development multiplayer experience for people. So for that reason, we still want to continue to support it. We will have, you know, the championship events of a convention variety instead of part of the championship series itself at events like Gen Con and Origins. And you'll even have, you know, an event at World Championships. We've got, you know, unique prizes for those events, as expressed by some of the community for Gen Con and for Origins. They'd like to see some more of that, so that's what we're going to try to do going forward. And then there's also great events that are happening out there in the community, like they're running a great Melee side event alongside the French National Championships this weekend. And then there's also Stalek, of course. And so for Stalek, we're definitely going to throw our support behind that event as much as we've done in the past, if not more, and support the community that's making that great event happen. Not only with, you know, unique prizes for that event, but also the Joust and the Melee champion will have the ability and the privilege of working together to design a card, each of them, with the developers of the game. The kind of focus that we want to say for Melee is that it's a great additional way to experience the game, which we think is reflective of how the community at large views it. Joust being kind of the default way that people expect to play, and Melee being this other great opportunity to engage in a different form and try to roll out some cards and some experiences that they don't get elsewhere. So for that reason, you're going to see some cool other events happening around the world as well. One key one that I'll mention is that at some very important regional locations, there will be a Sunday event for Melee to kind of enhance the experience and make them kind of bigger, more travel-worthy events for people to come out to in their regions. We're hoping to have quite a few of those in the U.S. and then around the world some as well. So we're looking forward to that. And just going forward, it's important to maintain the mindset that Melee is a great format. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play. It has challenges from a tournament perspective, but we're very committed to making sure that people still have the ability to enjoy it alongside the way that's supported through the championship series of Joust.
So another big one that we kind of hit on before, or at least seems big to the players, is kind of the issue of communication. And I know you'd mentioned before that you know, you're working on getting FFG kind of more forthright and smoothing out those lines of communication. But you mentioned a couple new communication features that all the rest of us here were kind of mystified about and hadn't heard of. So what would you point the listeners to?
So I will definitely point the listeners to our new webpage that we've been working on for Fantasy Flight Games Organized Play, which is fantasyflightgames.com/OP. If you can't get it to come up like that, as someone suggested, fantasyflightgames.com/EN/OP might help. From there, you can get to a lot of different places, one of which is the feedback forum, where if you have an experience at an event itself or you have an idea about, you know, some kind of feedback for us about the prizes that are in a certain kit, or even how an event is happening out there in the world that you think we should take a look at, there's the Organized Play feedback form, which can be found at /OP/feedback on the website. And then you've also got the newsletter, which is right there under the drop-down menu for Organized Play newsletters on the Organized Play website, the /OP website. There's a community one and there's a retailer one. If you have an interested retailer that wants to be notified when there's new kits and things to start adding to their Organized Play offerings. So those are two ways that we've been working on. I know that they're not the most visible, hence that some people haven't heard about them or seen them yet. We really are trying to be more receptive to feedback and being able to act on it more often. One of the things I mentioned is that, you know, we have tossed around the idea of having kind of like a playtest group, if you will, for stuff more on the Organized Play side of things, that depending on what kind of feedback maybe we receive through the feedback forum, might be something that we'd be interested in pursuing if the community is looking forward to it. I would go on to say that we are seeking to be more transparent. We're seeking to be more communicative. It's always going to be a learning experience finding out where to do that, especially when we have so many games and so much to tell people about on a daily basis. Creating a kind of stream to get people information about events when that information is much more targeted than a lot of the information you see on the main pages of our website and whatnot. This is much more targeted information for very passionate fans and players that are going, you know, to these more important events and whatnot. And we're discovering new ways. We're investigating them for sure. In the meantime, it would really be in everyone's best interest and helpful to us if you follow at FFGOP on Twitter. And we get a lot of updates out through the Twitter account while we find something that maybe is more suitable to what the community might be looking for.
Well, I don't know about you, Zach, but I had a pretty good weekend last weekend at Gen Con, and I'm hoping you all at Fantasy Flight did as well. And then a few weeks prior to that was Origins, the U.S. National Championship. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how you thought those two events went in general, and then maybe some more specific thoughts on the graduated cut system, that those were the first two big tests for that system.
Certainly. So the conventions themselves went amazing. I think both of them were really well received by players. We had more players, over 200 playing Game of Thrones at Gen Con. And then to mention the side events, of course, the Melee event did really well. And then also we had the very first draft for the game there as well. And we actually brought far more product than we originally sold seats for, anticipating that we might have additional seats. And we ended up even selling out of that product. So even the draft format for the game looks amazing right now. I'm really excited to get to play sometime soon, hopefully. But all that being said, those conventions went really well, but we can always improve, right? There's a lot of opportunities to, you know, use some of the things that we've learned and bring in, you know, some more excitement to various events. The Origins in particular, you know, it's the first year we've been there with the national championships for the USA. Whereas before we would always kind of meld the USA national championships with the North American championships and host that at Gen Con. So separating the two, them being so close geographically and, you know, date on the calendar, they do provide some overlap. So, you know, there's the potential to do some exciting things with nationals in the future, and we're looking forward to it. Graduated cut, I would say that it's also been very well received. The community seems to like the idea of what it tries to do, which is mostly it's trying to establish at least a set number of people advancing, and then saying, oh, if there's, you know, another group of players up to another additional number that have the same number of tournament points as the last place person who was going to make the cut guaranteed, also advance with them. What it ends up doing frequently is it captures just a percentage of the people who would be in the next worst grouping of tournament points, thereby ensuring that most of the people that make the advancement are going to be the people that have the highest tiebreakers, if you will, or you know, the best chance to try to ascend to a final cut to single elimination in the tournament.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad that you're seeing success in that system too. I'm kind of a tournament format nut myself, and I've really enjoyed the graduated cut. I was wondering if you've had any pushback, just as a quick follow-up to the graduated cut itself, on the idea that people at the bottom of that, so in the case of Thrones, the 4 and 2s that make it, can't actually advance to the top 8 itself, and whether that's been something that you've gotten any feedback on, or whether people like it better if fewer people advance that all have the chance to make it.
Yeah, I think what it ends up showing, it provides an opportunity. Let's put it like that. So there's any type of cut that you do, unless it's strictly record based, and you know, it's record based are largely unforgiving, is going to cut to some people that are very unlikely to make a cut to elimination rounds. The question becomes, you know, how forgiving do you want the tournament structure to be throughout the course of the event in order to have those people ascend? Where we have it this past year, where, like you were saying, some of the people who have two losses coming into the three additional rounds of Swiss before the cut to the top eight on the graduated cut day have a suboptimal chance at best to make the final cut to that top eight single elimination is really reflective of, you know, there are some people who are going to end up with that record that at least want the shot. And then in addition, they also want the ability to compete for the top 16 prizes and whatnot. One thing we tried at Gen Con, and I think it went over fairly well, was that we awarded, you know, one tier of prizes to the people who made the advancement. But then in addition to that, beyond even what was posted on the website, we provided that same prize to people that had the same record as those people that were receiving that prize. And the reason we did that was because, you know, of course, one, the tiebreakers system, you know, is based on strength of schedule. So, you know, we want to advance players to the elimination rounds that have the best, you know, proof that they've done the best throughout the day. And when you look at tiebreakers, that's what that's trying to accomplish, is measuring that. But we don't want to provide a reward to someone based on that entirely out of their control system, if you will. You know, you don't get to pick who you play against. So, you know, if you've had a tougher day, you should be rewarded. But at the same time, we don't want to cut you out from getting the same kind of prizes that some of those people got as well. I think there exists a world in which we can decide that we just want to do a records-based cut and go from there. But so far, the community response has been relatively positive, even though there are some players advancing that may not have the opportunity to make that final single elimination cut.
Yeah, and I, for what it's worth, I did appreciate seeing the 4-2 record plateau being rewarded as well. I thought that was a really positive thing, and I'm hoping other people feel that way as well.
Yeah, I think it was well received, and I think one of the things that actually made the tournament a better experience for everybody that I don't think many people have taken notice of yet, to share with a fellow tournament structure nut, was one of the biggest issues that you have at conventions like Gen Con or Origins is that there's just so much to do. You know, there's so many things that are grabbing at people's attention and whatnot, which is not a bad thing. We're just happy that some of their attention has been grabbed by coming and playing one of their favorite games with us. But that being said, some people do decide to take off from the event. And so one of the things we did was we awarded one of the prizes, the community support card, the printed card, to people when they were done with the event, meaning that they had to come in and check up at the front and say, I am done with the event in order to get that prize, meaning they dropped or you know, had completed a certain number of rounds. And so what that resulted in was there was almost no one who sat down to play a match during the Swiss rounds of an event, and they did not have an opponent who had just wandered off and decided that they were no longer playing. So almost every match in those events was played, which is great. All those people got the opportunity to play all the rounds that they wanted to play.
Yeah, that's definitely a real positive.
So I think that a lot of people were positive about the tournaments at Gen Con and Origins. I know that a lot of the people that I talked to had a lot of fun at those events, but there were definitely some hiccups that came up, and some of them, or one of them in particular, I guess really stood out to me as like a pretty major fumble, so to speak, in the Joust tournament. Someone that I know, entered their match result correctly on their slip, but when they turned it into the organizers, the result was entered incorrectly into the computer system, and then at the end of the six rounds, they didn't make the cut because their listed point total was not their actual point total, and it caused them to miss the graduated cut and not get to play on the second day of the tournament through something that was basically not their own fault at all, and their recompense was the same prize that everyone who got 4-2 record got, that Night's Watch house card. So I guess I'm just wondering, you know, is there something that's being done to attempt to make sure that nothing like that happens again? Or is that something that we just have the risk of happening repeatedly? Or I guess, were you made aware of that situation and how did you respond to it?
Certainly. Good question. The first thing I'll say is, you know, we always apologize whenever we make any kind of error that negatively impacts somebody's tournament experience. And, you know, I don't recall this specific incident. Maybe it wasn't brought to my attention, but regardless, I would hope that that player, you know, if they haven't already, reaches out to us so we can, you know, take care of them and make them feel like they had a better end to the event than they may have. That being said, we have done a couple of things to help players kind of keep track of where they are in the tournament to, you know, potentially combat these types of human errors that just are ultimately, you know, reducible but unavoidable at the end of the day. So the one thing they can do that is in the new version of Tome is when you look at the result slips that are handed out each round for people to fill in and bring up to the front after their match, is that next to your name in the same row, it says tournament points as one of the headers of the columns, and then it's got your number of tournament points that you earned in the event. So if you know how many tournament points a win is worth and a timed win and so on and so forth, you can calculate exactly how many tournament points you should have and make sure that that number matches at the beginning of each round, you know, which the result slip will reach you sometime immediately after you start playing. And if they see an error, that's a great time to come and correct that, to make sure, you know, anything caught in the last round doesn't impact them playing the wrong category of opponent for many, many rounds, right? The other thing that we do, to kind of combat things like this is that what you don't want to see is something in the last round of a tournament having a really negative impact on people's perception of how fair and balanced the advancement was. So if you see a situation where someone, you know, has the wrong record going into that round, plays someone based on that wrong record, you know, somebody else who, according to the measurement of the tournament, you know, is not as good as somebody who might have additional wins that day. The downside and the thing you don't want to see is that person coming up at the end and being able to say, hey, I played the wrong person that round, but you know, the advancement for me should still happen. So what we do to combat that is after the fifth round and before we pair the sixth round, we put up the full standings, the current leaderboard for the event, for people to go up and check and verify their current tournament points. And we do that so that people have an opportunity to contest anything that they may see, which, you know, in some events can be a lot of things. You know, maybe something was input wrong, you know, early on, and that's affected everything from there. Or it could be, you know, a minor thing where, you know, they're a simple, you know, tournament point off of what they should be. So they get that opportunity to check. And at Gen Con, we gave players that opportunity after the fifth round. And we say, if we don't have any corrections to this, they'll become final and we won't be able to modify anything prior to this round after the next round. So in holding with that, that's probably what ended up creating the situation you mentioned. But it's very helpful if players can help us avoid the, you know, human errors by checking that next to their name and then also always checking whenever we post a leaderboard that their current tournament points are correct. And again, our fault, you know, we apologize for those human errors when they occur, and hopefully that player gets in contact so we can take care of them.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's definitely good just to let people know in a forum exactly like this that those points are on those sheets now, because that, like you just said, this is a very new addition to the Tome software, and that wasn't something that you could find on those score sheets previously. I know that I personally noticed that the points were on there like halfway through the day and started paying attention to them. But I think it's good now that hopefully people will know that they're there and will know to check them for the future.
Certainly. Yeah.
So I wanted to bring up, not to bring the mood of the interview down, but I wanted to bring up a different tournament issue that I had heard about. And this I had heard secondhand, so this is speculation to some degree. But I was told that the strength of schedule scores from day one, due to some computer issue, did not end up carrying over to the graduated cut. And I'm wondering if that's an issue that you knew about and an issue that you are looking, taking steps to remedy going forward. Because, you know, of course, strength of schedule is a pretty important tiebreaker when you get up that high.
Yes, definitely. So the issue that you're talking about is that the first copy of the standings after the fifth round that we posted had that issue with them on the second, or I shouldn't say fifth round, after the second round out of the three Swiss rounds on the graduated cut day, we posted standings, and we immediately noticed that those standings were not properly reflecting the strength of schedule from the previous day. So we let players know to just verify their tournament points, and that we'd have a fresh copy of those standings posted probably near to the end of the round that while they were playing the third round. So players verified their tournament points prior to that third round of Swiss play on the graduated cut day. And then while they were playing, we actually went through and made the modifications necessary to get the strength of schedule corrected in terms of how it was being calculated into those standings. The technical issue is basically the way that we conducted the cut of the graduated cut precedes the event as a new event in Tome. And so we had to go back and instead keep the event the same and just drop all of the players that did not make the graduated cut and then continue from there. And that solved the problem. So it all got fixed in the end. You know, the proper people advanced to the top eight and the proper people got prizes. It was just that minor issue with that set of standings when we noticed it and then went through and repaired everything.
So in the end, the people who advanced the strength of schedules from day one were reflected?
Correct.
In the strength of schedules? Okay.
Yeah.
That's very good to hear because I had not heard that until now. So that's very heartening, especially as the winner. I obviously want the event to be as legitimate as possible. How do you feel overall with Tome? I haven't run an event off of it, but I know, you know, everybody uses it for regionals and things like that. Do you feel like it's in a good place going forward?
I think it's in a really great place. They've done a lot of development on it recently. That's gotten a lot of things to be more clear to the people running the tournaments and to be more reliable for everyone, which is really critical for software that's, you know, maintaining these events that people have a lot of, you know, passion behind. I think its current situation is that it's basically in an available beta. You know, if it's something that you want access to, you can email why you want access to it to organizeplay@fantasyflightgames.com. And we can field those responses to make sure that you have access to it if you need it. At this point, a lot of people have access to it, and a lot of people have shared how to get access to it, which is completely fine as long as we still can ask for your help in sending in any bug reports or feature requests or anything like that through that feedback availability on the Tome software itself. That being said, I think there's a lot of things that we can do to make the experience flow more cleanly for people. And we've got, you know, a nice list of items that we've got to work on. But I will say that the great software developers over at FFG/Asmodee North America that have been working on it since the beginning are doing a fantastic job. The tournament software that we brought to Gen Con is a large percentage of the reason that the event was so successful and so smooth for so many people. It's really miraculous to be able to have that resource available to us now. It's quite a blessing. So we're very happy to have it where it is, and we hope it works out there in the world.
I guess I had one other point. It's sort of a twofold question regarding prize support. First, we'll start at sort of the smaller local level where you sell more kits. Why the change to the season kits where there's no more mats or deck boxes? At least the last two seem to reflect that. And I'll let you answer that first before I ask about nationals and continentals.
Gotcha. So the change to tournament kits has a lot of reasons behind it. The main one is that what we found is that the mats that people were most impressed with were the ones that we ended up saving the best art for, because there's, you know, art isn't an unlimited resource, you know, of high quality art that looks great on playmats that people want. So the ones that look the best are frequently the events that, you know, have the most prestige. That's where we're using those assets. And because of that, those mats are the ones that mean the most to the most people. So that being said, that's one of the reasons why you don't see mats there anymore. Deck boxes, to be honest, they take a large commitment up front to make them in time to get them out for those things, so, or for tournament kits. So all those things put together just kind of led us to this position where the tournament kits for every game, including Game of Thrones, are getting streamlined, as you've probably seen with the announcement for the quarter one tournament kits for 2017, where, you know, they have 17 of a card, 3 of a card, the higher end card, and then the 2 copies of the prize item or token set that comes in that kit as well. So those we hope will be very manageable from a logistical perspective. And then in turn, that'll allow us to supply them more easily to this rapidly growing global community of retailers and distributors and partners and all these great people that are making organized play happen around the world.
That was a totally satisfactory answer to that question. That was amazing. And then the next question I had is, you know, given the prize support that some of the community's been used to, a lot of people really, really loved the regional playmat and the wooden house card, all that stuff. Sorry, faction card. But felt that the Nationals prize support was a little bit underwhelming. And that carried over into Gen Con, seeing as there were a lot of repeat prizes. So I'm just curious as to where you see prize support for the huge premier events are going.
That is a very valid question. I will say this. There were definitely some prizes in the Nationals kit, and then, of course, the Continental, the North American Championship prizes that were not received anywhere near as well as we had hoped they would be, most definitely. There's one person on my team who was the forewarner of the possible reception of these, and he gets to say "I told you so" when I get to the office tomorrow. But that being said,
Can I just ask you, are we talking about the tokens?
Who's...
Or the gold tokens.
I don't want to point fingers and say whose ideas was what, for sure. But I will say that, you know, we were hoping that they'd have a much better reception as they did amongst some of our team. That being said, this is a great opportunity to use that OP feedback forum and let us know, you know, hey, I would have rather seen this, or, you know, these things aren't all that useful to me, or, you know, this is the type of prize that, you know, I would expect at this level of an event or something like that. That's all great feedback that we'd love to get an opportunity to read. There's been, you know, different prizes in years past, obviously, that people, you know, perceive a certain value behind and whatnot. I remember the messenger bags being one of them and whatnot, you know, there's possibilities to use again, but perhaps people prefer, you know, something else entirely that we haven't even thought of yet. So the one of the reasons we had the printed tokens or the printed acrylic, as it were, is just because they had this new awesome manufacturing process that we really wanted to see how the community would respond to. And unfortunately, this one didn't go as well as we had hoped some of it would. I will let you know that in other games that you might not play personally, the same acrylic has gone over really well. So we're hoping that we can find an opportunity to use it for something that you might like a little bit more. Hopefully uses some of the assets that the game has that make people excited about, you know, what could visually be presented in that medium. But again, you know, we're all making decisions based on, you know, what we think players will be excited by, and when we get it wrong, we learn from that, and we move forward and try not to make that mistake again. So your feedback's valuable now. Your feedback will be great on that forum if you have better ideas. op/op/feedback is where to send that to us, and we thank you for it in advance.
So the acrylic printing, was that for the gold tokens?
No, the gold tokens are etched and then painted. The throne was the printed.
The Iron Throne, right? Yeah. I will say that I do appreciate the changes to the store championship kits. Those were definitely, I think, all positive changes. I personally have about 15 deck boxes that I never use, but I've used my Lannister tokens all the time since I won them at a spring tournament kit. But I'm happy to hear that you guys are adapting to feedback. I think that is it's the best news that we could have hoped for coming out of this OP season, because I know that a lot of people at Nationals were a little disappointed, especially with the first player token. But
yeah. Understandable. I will definitely say that one of the benefits to having, you know, having a manager for the team is that the team gets to focus, you know, a lot more. They can take their energies and direct them towards things quite a bit more. That usually ends up resulting in us hopefully being further ahead of where we were, which was purely a necessity at the onset, that just the production schedules and whatnot demanded, you know, this 6-month timeline for taking pre-orders for a product for a kit and then getting that produced and sent out to the world. What I want to say there is that, you know, the feedback's great, but just keep in mind, you know, we're already planning, like I said, through regionals next year, you know, for kits and things that are happening and prizes that are going into things and whatnot. So just, you know, at the same rate that we want to open up channels of communications, please be patient with us in how quickly we can respond to those things. As we grow, we become a little less nimble, and we need your help and patience to weather when something you don't like is currently there.
Cool. Thanks for touching on that a little bit. I'm going to wrap up the discussion with a question about a couple of programs that either players have asked about or have been suggested or offered previously. I'll start with the first one, and that one is there any interest from Fantasy Flights and in having a rating system at all for players? It's something that was promised in an article on the Fantasy Flight website several years ago, so far before your time. And I'm just curious if there is still interest in that from Fantasy Flight and if that's something that's being developed. And then I have another program after that.
I don't think I can reveal anything about what the plans for that are currently, unfortunately. But I will say that it is on people's minds and that, you know, it's an interesting idea for sure. The ratings thing, no immediate answer. Sorry about that.
No, that's perfectly fine. I understand you have to keep confidentiality. The second program that a lot of people ask about is the judge program, and that's something that's been far more recent, and I think maybe during your tenure, I'm not sure. So is there any progress on that? Are we going to see a judge program soon?
Correct. So what we want to do is we want to have a knowledge testing center. For people who want to engage with their favorite games through one of the many varieties that people engage with games, and that is through, you know, being the most knowledgeable, the expert in their area, the person that's, you know, teaching new players, that's, you know, telling players when they're playing incorrectly, or, you know, interpret a rule for them, or predict how a certain card is going to work. Those are the type of people that we want to engage with the testing program that we want to offer, where people can come and they can say, all right, I'm going to take this test and I'm going to prove how much knowledge I have on this subject. And then I'm going to be able to turn around and take that, you know, score, that certificate or whatever to, my local store and say, hey, you know, I definitely am an expert in this game. You know, I'd like to help you out by, you know, assisting at one of your events, like a store championship or, you know, even a tournament kit. It's also a great way to kind of make an introduction and say, hey, you know, I can help you start organized play in this store and get things going a little more frequently in your area so people have more opportunities to play. We originally wanted to roll this out by July, but as you can imagine, behind the scenes, there are always things that are pushing and delaying and reprioritizing different projects. And unfortunately, this was one of the things that fell a little bit down the ladder. So we're hoping for, you know, deployment as soon as we can get some infrastructure in place that we were having trouble with. And I don't currently have a timeline for that, but I'm very, very hopeful that it will still be this year. So keep an eye out for that. Definitely, if you're interested, the OP newsletter is the right thing to sign up for to get a heads up when that comes out.
Well, awesome. Thank you for being so forthcoming with us on everything that you could, Zach. And thank you for bearing with us through a multitude of computer difficulties, as is, I think, par for the course, our co-hosts and listeners know. It feels like it's a different problem every week, but there's always something.
Hey, I got that exact same feeling about pretty much everything.
It wouldn't be the White Book if we didn't have a plethora of technical issues.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on, listeners. Unfortunately, we will not be having a props and slops segment this week due to time constraints after fighting our technical difficulties. So I will just once again pass one more thank you to Zach. A huge congratulations to Chris and you guys suck. I'm jealous. To Patrick and Luke, since they got to go to Gen Con and I didn't.
It was awesome.
Fair enough.
I agree. It was awesome. Thanks for having me on the cast, Will, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah. And, you know, I saw some pretty killer videos, Luke. Seems like you spent most of the weekend in the... Really? Nobody?
In the what?
Nobody's gonna...
No, I. Thank oh, you. Gosh, I wasn't. I was sorry.
I wish I'd been recording that. I should have been recording forever ago. Okay.
Would you have recorded it on with one of your old ones in the closet?
I would have. You always need to have that backup just in case. I'd have to start doing that every week.
Are they all like wrapped up and shoved in a box somewhere? Or?
Well, you know, there's like one in a box over here. There's one on a shelf there. You don't want to put them all in the same place.
Yeah, I feel like Kristen would be really upset if they were all in the same place, taking up so much space.
Yeah, exactly. That just draws too much attention to it. Okay.